All right, welcome into another episode of That's So Cincinnati, episode 47. I'm going to say this right off the top. Folks, thank you so much for listening and the feedback off of last week's episode, which we had Hamilton County Prosecutor Joe Dieters. It is our most listened to episode yet in, since we launched this endeavor back in right after Labor Day of 2018. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Can't thank everyone enough. The listenership keeps going up and up and up. So just really appreciate it. And I want to welcome in, piping in from the Great Lakes of Michigan as she takes a little bit of time off, but she wants to obviously stick with the podcast. Calling in to the hotline is my co-host, my friend, and my political partner in crime, Sherry Coolidge. Sherry, how are you?
I'm sitting on the water as we speak, but you know, we can't go that long without talking. So it's like, we had to do this anyway. We might as well record it.
Are you, Lake Michigan? Is that what you're on?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
Lake Michigan.
It's lovely. And honestly, I can't think of anything that's more That's So Cincinnati than going to the beaches of Michigan for vacation.
I know that's, you're exactly right. It's either Cincinnatians go to Michigan, lakes in Michigan, or they go to Destin, Florida, or Hilton Head, or Charleston, Myrtle Beach, somewhere in South Carolina. So
you throw everything in the car and go. And I'm going to tell you, after last week, I worked until the very second we left for here, and I literally ran upstairs, threw everything, you know, in a bag and threw it in the car. I forgot basically everything I need, but it's okay. I could buy it here.
I can attest to that because we were all in here late pretty much every night last week, and it was a crazy news week. As so many of your listeners know, last week was Tracy Hunter 24/7, and thanks so much for everyone who, again, listened to the podcast, read our news coverage, our commentary. We had three in-house columns on it with different perspectives. We had two or three op-eds on it. So no one was giving you that kind of coverage on such a huge, important news story. And we delivered, and we're still delivering. We're still following that story. Now, switching gears to another big story, kind of the story that just keeps on giving, really. And that's the banks. Sherry, yesterday, the Banks Joint Steering Committee met for the first time in a long time. I believe it was over a year. And that Banks Joint Steering Committee is a group of business and community leaders appointed by half by the county and half by the city. And they met to discuss, give an update on the outdoor concert venue, what's going on at the banks. And they also made an announcement in which they are they're bringing a new office tower or office building to the banks. However, no tenant. I'm just going to be straight up here, Sherry, and I'm going to say this was a big dog and pony show. It was a PR move to try to lessen some of the criticism of the banks and this outdoor concert venue. What's your take on it?
They were desperate to get the timeline. That's the other thing on the record. That's the other thing that really came out of this meeting. It's like they wanted to plant a flag in the ground and say, hey, guess what? We're building the parking structure right now, and we're going to be done by 2020, like next year. And I think they wanted to reiterate that they're still doing this, even though Kentucky's doing theirs, and theirs is going to be open the same time.
Yeah. At the end of the day, if you cut through it all, though, Sherry, I mean, what do you make of this? The fact that they announced this new office tower, it's going to have kind of an industrial look, but also, have some glass sort of modern-y look to it. I would think it's probably going to be somewhat in the mold of the GE office building that's already there. What do you make of that announcement, Sherry?
This is honestly, because I watched it from afar, right? So I'm not covering it or anything. I'm watching it like a county resident would be watching it. And so I'm watching that unfold, right? And then the reporter in me is, I have been very critical about the idea that they haven't been as transparent as I feel like our officials need to be about, you know, this huge project, you know, billions of dollars. And they did do that. So I'm going to give them that. But it did feel very plant the flag in the ground. This is what we're doing. It was no tenant. And at this point, as we start to really complete the banks, what I'm looking for is how this all fits together. I don't want to see an office building. I want to see what the office building brings to all the things around it. What does it look like? How does it fit in? And the same thing for the music venue, which I have to say the music venue looks lovely, right? But I need to see the total, because at some point here we're going to be done. And then that's going to be it. This is going to be our waterfront. And so it's like, what is that? What's the finished product? We have to start thinking very big about what the idea that it's all going to look like. And I'll tell you what, the thing that, you know, they're not really saying out loud is we want to buy Hilltop. So all that land, that swath of land with the idea so we can move the music venue, right? It's a swap, fine, to build a parking lot. And we need to start having the conversation, is that swath of land long, like in the gleam in everybody's eyes of riverfront property, what it could look like?
Yep.
Is that the best use of it? And are we thinking big of what we want our riverfront to look like? And, you know, from everyone's, you know, the people who want the music venue think, well, that's a great idea. And the people, the Bengals, you know, who need tailgate parking, and I'm not going to fault them for that. That's part of the whole experience, and they're taking that away. They're happy. But from a citizen's perspective, it's how we have to start looking at this. Like, what's the best use of how this all looks together? Because you've heard me say this. One of my friends lives in Washington, D.C., at the Wharf, a brand new, you know, sprung out of the ground, basically neighborhood, which is what we are doing here, is lovely and walkable and all fits together and is what you want the waterfront to be like. And I need to make sure, like, as a citizen, I'm looking to see if that's what we're doing here.
For any of our new listeners, Sherry, I forgot to say, Sherry's our Cincinnati City Hall reporter. Previous to that, she covered Hamilton County government for several years. So no one has covered and knows this Banks project better than her in this town in terms of reporting on it.
You know, and I do want to say, I did move here in 2002, and it was a mud pit.
Yep.
And they got this thing off the ground in a recession. And it was very hard. And I also give them a lot of credit for that. But this is the time where we need to start thinking, do we need to wait a minute? What do we want? Is it have every little piece that, you know, a good development waterfront has? Or are we just, you know, desperately casting a line out there? And I'm not going to say we are or we aren't. But it's that big picture that I want the officials to have these conversations. So later we can all look back and be like, this is what was envisioned, even if there were like struggle times of like getting funding and financing and maybe, you know, early restaurants went out of business, which is actually not that unusual for developments.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's be honest here. The public's had very little say in it. The public has been asked to have very little say in it, yet the public has a lot of opinions about it. And the public certainly is pouring millions and millions of tax dollars into it. I've got a lot of questions. There's a lot of, you know, you and Dan wrote a piece a couple weeks ago, earlier this month about the lack of transparency on the banks on this Hilltop sale, which we've heard, could be in upwards of $40 million for county taxpayers to have to buy that land.
Well, let's not say a number. That's why I made the public records request, so we don't technically know what it is.
Exactly.
But Jason and I know a lot of things.
Exactly.
We're not going to say that's the number.
Right. I mean, yeah, right. I mean, these are the things what we hear from.
We don't really know. That's why we ask.
Thank you for clarifying that. We, at the end of the day, we don't know the exact number, but I think it's safe to say it's going to be tens of millions of dollars. And you're right, Sherry, it's just so ill-conceived. It's a small group of people who are trying to control everything. And I question whether they have the public's best interest in mind here, especially when you look at, they already had a lot ready to go, for the concert venue. And this goes back, and you can read our coverage on Cincinnati.com about the fight over whether Lot 24 was one that was ready to go, and Lot 27, which is up next to Paul Brown Stadium, is where it actually is going to end up going if they ever build it. But in order for them to do that, the Bengals had to get involved and give up that lot. And then across the street where the Hilltop Concrete is, so anyone who's not familiar with downtown, right on the riverfront between Paul Brown Stadium and the river, is a massive concrete company. And so the county then is going to buy that land, move Hilltop Concrete somewhere else, and then that's going to become a Bengals parking lot. The Bengals will have the option to build an indoor practice facility there, but that's their decision, and that's not a foregone conclusion they're going to do that.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing that raised the most concern for me yesterday. Even with the idea that these are going to be the plans and they're kind of rolling them out, you know, the county is like, okay, everything's great and happy. But the city is like, whoa,
yep.
We are not sure, and we're not going to get any money until we are sure. And the county then responds with, oh, I'm sure it'll be fine. I'm not sure it'll be fine. Like, as the Cincinnati City Hall reporter, you know, I can read between the lines. They're not happy. And so those kind of conversations, yep. I mean, I'm kind of looking, honestly, for a joint meeting between our government leaders, the ones who are actually elected, to have a conversation, because of course they can't talk to each other without really doing that and making decisions. But maybe it's time to have a very public conversation about this. And the city also has to take into account, first of all, let's not forget, the city's in the county. We're all one.
Yep.
That tends to get lost.
That gets lost. Yes, it does.
But they have to move Hilltop somewhere, and they're talking about moving it to Lower Price Hill. But the city has made promises to Lower Price Hill. They've taken a lot of manufacturing down there. There are people who live there. There is a community council, and they care about what happens in their community. And you can't just be like, we're going to shove stuff in there. They have been promised a park, and the city council, who is elected to represent people who live in Lower Price Hill, they need to think about that.
Yep.
And I don't blame them for thinking about that, because otherwise then you get to the point, let's throw a whole other big development in there, which is the FC Cincinnati soccer stadium.
Yep.
Just like they had to think about what was happening in that neighborhood and make those tough decisions, Lower Price Hill matters too.
Here's the damnedest thing about the whole thing is that it's the county commissioners and their attorney, their bank's attorney, Tom Gableman, and Bob Castellini have all these grand plans. But at the end of the day, this is going to be city council who can really is going to call the shots on this, because in order to move Hilltop over to Lower Price Hill, city council has to approve some zoning. It's also land that I believe that the city owns. So then the city is going to have to call the shots on how that land's going to go. That land currently is leased to a Cincinnati Bulk Terminals right now. And so what's interesting is there's all this talk and all this PR going on, and let's cut to the chase. That's what yesterday was all about, was PR and grandiose. Look at all these wonderful things that are going on. But ultimately, city council is going to call the shots here, and you know, on that. And then also, the county doesn't have the money yet to move Hilltop, and so they can talk timelines all they want. They're saying that the concert venue is going to open by next fall, and that Hilltop will be moved in the next 2 years. Maybe.
You know, the other people who need to be brought into the discussion are across the river, Northern Kentucky, right? Who are clearly making decisions, which of course they should be, right? What's best for their community. But nobody is having the discussion what's best for everybody.
Nope.
Two music venues, two Ferris wheels.
Yep.
Two Ferris wheels.
It's ridiculous. I'm glad you brought that up, because it's really frustrating and disheartening to see government, the county government, continue to push forward with this music venue when on the other side of the river, ultimately, Hamilton County and Cincinnati got beat on this. Promo West is going to Newport. They've already broken ground. And everyone should be saying, like, look, great. We don't have to put taxpayer money into this, because it's going to cost, $19, $20 million to build the parking garage underneath the new concert venue at the Banks.
Right. Which we need anyway. So if that's going forward, if that has to be a platform, no matter what's going to go on top of that. So the idea that we're starting that right now is not necessarily like precludes having conversations about really what should happen.
Here's the thing, though. You've already got the parking garage already ready to go, and a lot of the infrastructure is already in place. Had they done the original lot that many at City Hall wanted, including the mayor, John Cranley, Lot 24, which is across from Pies and Pints and Taste of Belgium, for to give you a geographical perspective. Where do we go from here, Sherry? What next on this? And what do you see happening?
Well, Scott Wortman, myself, Dan Horn, Randy Tucker, we are asking a lot of questions. But honestly, it really needs to be this big conversation. And the people who need to be part of the conversation, a very public conversation, is what we want to look like in the future, right? This last piece, that's the city, the county, Northern Kentucky. And I also would like to see, a various other kind of like diverse voices, right? That this just isn't being decided by the same old people that have been making the decisions all along. And even if those are the people on the, steering committee, that's fine. But I would like them to listen to voices. I want them to listen to young voices, diverse voices. And I want them, really, and to look outside to best practices, other waterfronts, yep. Right? I just feel like we haven't done that in so long. And we did it at the beginning. I can remember like surveys and then, we went to Atlanta and we talked to this developer and what do they do? And I want a bigger picture look. And that's lacking in so many things and a lot of our government.
You know what it is? It's so Cincinnati is what it is. And it's frustrating. And you're right. It's just, it's been, piecemealed together. There's never been a real or maybe there has been talks of it, but right now, it's just we're throwing things against the wall and seeing what sticks, and it's a small group of people who are controlling it and thinking this is what's best for everyone, or this is ultimately maybe what they think is best for themselves. And
I think it's worth pointing out that it looks nothing like it was conceived.
You're right. That's a great point. Yes. And the other thing, too, is
when we started spending money and we said we're spending money on this, and these two stadiums, you're going to approve the sales tax, and this is what it's going to look like in between the stadiums. Like, I do think that we should at least be, look back a little bit too. Okay, but that's part of a big picture look back and forward.
I'm of the mind too that something needs to be. I'm glad you said that the county commissioners and the city council, they should have a joint meeting on this. I believe the government on something like this, where there's so much tax dollars at stake and at play here, needs to take back control of this whole thing. Right now, you've got Bob Castellini and Tom Gableman and the small handful of others who are not even everyone who's on this bank steering committee who are kind of just sort of doing their own thing on this. And this bank steering committee, maybe it's time to, take another look at that, and maybe there's a different oversight setup that needs to be put in place, or some restructuring of that, because it's not meeting regularly, yet things are happening, and the transparency and what you and I care about are the people and the public and the tax dollars, and being the watchdogs of that and holding the public officials accountable. And there's a lot of issues here.
All right. Well, I don't think this is going to be the last time we talk about this.
No, and it certainly isn't the first time we've talked about it podcast either. Let's switch. I didn't mention this at the top of the episode, but we're jumping back after a couple of serious episodes with Tracy Hunter last week, and we had Chief Isaac from Cincinnati Police in the previous week to talk about crime and need for more officers on the streets. We're now going to jump back and to have a little bit of fun, summer fun here, and we're going to bring in Jason Barron, who's the executive director of Red Bike, to talk about all the exciting things that are going on there. So let's bring Jason in. All right, continuing with our fun summer episodes and summertime. Few things are more fun in the summertime than riding a bike, although you can do it all year round, as Jason Barron has. We welcome in to the hot seat, Red Bike Executive Director Jason Barron, and one of the good guys in Cincinnati.
The Jason. Seat doesn't feel too hot. The air conditioning at the Enquirer is quite good, I can report. And so it's a very comfortable seat today.
Thanks for being here.
Glad to be.
A lot of things going on at Red Bike right now. How many years are we into this now?
So this is our fifth summer. Red Bike started in fall of 2014. Mm-hmm. We've been around so we're closing in our fifth birthday, but our fifth summer, which is certainly the busy season, as you hit on. When the weather gets great, people like to get out, like to ride bikes. I joke all the time when people ask me how I'm doing in the summer. Summer's a good time to be in the bike business. So
what's you now have electric bikes. That's your latest addition to the fleet.
This spring, we were one of the first cities in the country to roll out electric assist bikes. And for those folks who don't know what that is, an electric assist bike, or an e-bike as they're called, has a motor that's between the pedals. And so it's not a moped. So if you there's no throttle or anything like that. But when you pedal, it gives you a boost, mm-hmm. right? It makes you feel super strong. And there's a battery in the back that powers that. But as you pedal, there's like a whole bunch of technology in there that I'm not smart enough to know much about. But it compensates for how hard you're pedaling and how much resistance you're feeling. So when you're going up a hill, it gives you an added boost. And what that is it makes bicycle transportation, which is really the game Red Bike's in, a lot more realistic, feasible and efficient for folks, right? So there's a lot of people that have been using Red Bike to get around since we launched, but there's a lot of people that aren't. Mm-hmm. And what this does is it really makes long distance trips make a lot more sense. It makes short trips in bad weather make a lot more sense. It just really starts to turn the bicycle into something that's not just for the determined, but is also just for everybody. It's a way to get around. We're really excited about that.
Jason, it's my two Jasons.
It's always so good when you're when you have lots of Jasons around.
I agree with that.
Everything. It's been my experience.
We are fresh off taking a ride on the e-bikes. He knows I'm a big Red Bike person to get around town because I hate parking. And so it's a lot easier. But I was kind of afraid of the e-bikes. So we are fresh off a ride. It's like the kind of like best summer day to ride a bike.
Was that your first time, Sherry, on an e-bike?
It is, and it's so crazy that I was nervous about it because it was awesome. I mean, he used the word moped, and that's kind of what I had in my head, and I was just like, oh, it's going to be too powerful. I won't be able to control it. But it is. It's just like just a little boost to get you up the hills, or like you're going along, and it's like, here, you don't have to pedal this 1 minute.
Well, Sherry's hardcore. Sherry's been riding Red Bikes all the time from the beginning. We did a video with the Enquirer 4.5 years ago when we first launched. The Enquirer did a really cool video. There was a photographer hanging out of a van, and Sherry and I biked around the city, and it was really great. People still talk to me about that video, so I'm glad that it is still up.
And I have to say, so it's like it's kind of a defining moment in my life, which I was heavier then and starting to get in shape, and I was like, riding Red Bike around downtown would be a good way to do this. And I started riding Red Bike, and I remembered how much I actually liked to ride bikes.
Yep.
And I thought, well, if I could do this, then I could go to spin class, which I'm an addict of spin now. And that's kind of my thing. And then I actually bought a real bike, and the Coolidges all go biking.
Yep.
Kayak's a thing for later, Jason. Like, we're just progressing as we go along. But that's like, it was a defining moment for me of like, I'm an adult and I'm going to start riding a bike again, and I'm going to use it to get in shape.
What's been the response so far? How many electric bikes do you now have?
So we have 100, which is a pretty big fleet. Our whole fleet is 400 bikes that are out in the streets all the time. So we added 100. So about 1 in 4 are out there, which we were really excited about. There's a really big order. It's one of the biggest fleets in the city, in the country. Not only is it first, but one of the bigger fleets. And what we found out right away is it's nowhere near enough, right? Folks really love these e-bikes. The e-bikes are getting ridden a ton of times, as many as 4 times a day, 4 times more often than our regular bikes per bike basis, right? And so
when we got off the bikes from just riding, like 3 guys came up and there was plenty of bikes, but they wanted the e-bikes. They took them right from us.
Yeah, and then as they were going up the hill, the two guys on e-bikes were trailing the guy that wasn't on an e-bike. He was pulling away from them, so he was like Sherry in super shape. They've just been super popular. People like them. People are looking for them. We get calls. People are like, I went to three stations. I couldn't find one, but don't worry. I'll get them. Thanks so much. And people are just excited mm-hmm. to find them and to use them. We get reports from folks that are disappointed when they wake up in the morning and they go to their station, there isn't one. So it's been great and rewarding, and it kind of, you know, keeps our eye on the prize, which is we got to go out and find more of these to continue to make this experience great for everybody.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. So you're looking to... I mean, the response has been to a point where you're already looking to add more, huh?
Absolutely. So, I mean, you know, Red Bike's a nonprofit, right? So we've mm-hmm. got to go out and raise grant funding, and we've got to raise corporate funding, and we've got to raise individual donations in order to afford these things. You know, we raised a bunch of money last year to activate these, some of it through federal grants, which takes a little longer to get all the approvals and sign all the paperwork and dot all the I's and make sure you're doing everything perfectly. Some of the money we were able to activate right away to buy these initial 100 bikes. But we've got more grants out there, right? And we're always mm-hmm. looking for corporate partners that help us not only afford to buy new bikes, but help us keep these bikes in tip-top shape. You know, this is a service, and the bike share business is not a business that you make a lot of money in. Nobody's getting rich here. I mean, again, it's a nonprofit, but we got to find ways, you know, if we were charging market rates, it would be much, much more expensive to ride these bikes, but we're charging, you know, as affordable rates as we can in order to keep this thing up and running and keep the bikes in tip-top shape and, you know, get folks biking more butts on bikes.
How many stations do you have right now?
We have 57 stations. We're actually in the process through this federal grant of adding, between 8 and about 12 more we're picking out spots for right now. We're talking to community folks, and we're talking to the city, and we're talking to all kinds of folks to find our new spots. And then we're raising more money for future stations. So
you're currently all over really the urban core of Cincinnati. Also in what neighborhoods in Northern Kentucky are you
in? We're in Covington, Newport, and Bellevue mm-hmm. In Northern Kentucky, and the other cities are knocking on our door all the time. I'm having lunch with Jack Moreland of South Bank Partners next week, and he's got a lot of cities, those river cities he's in charge of, and he's always trying to get me to get more stations over there. We're also up around campus, so we're kind of all the way up to Northside, mm-hmm. you know, include the Clifton area, and then all of those various communities that make up that kind of uptown area. But we're looking at new areas to expand to, so we're looking at areas in Lower Price Hill. We're looking at areas in Avondale. We're looking to go out Columbia, Tusculum. You know, we're looking for all the areas that make sense. And these e-bikes really are a game changer. Mm-hmm. Now, they've increased the cost to buy these bikes. They're about twice as expensive as the previous bikes. But what they do for really connecting the community and allowing you to go further is just unbelievable.
How far can you go on one charge?
So it depends on how hard or easy is not the right word, but how hard you push the motor, right? So you can also turn the motor off and ride, right? And it just performs like a normal bike. They're not that much heavier than our normal red bikes. And so it depends on how fast you're going, how hard you're pedaling. But the average is about 30 miles. And we're kind of constantly jiggering the numbers and kind of making sure we get that mm-hmm. right and trying to dial that into to really precise. But it's about 30 miles, which when you think about it, that's
a lot.
A long way you can go. So we bought an e-bike last winter, so a year and a half ago, to start to sell these people, to help us raise money, to take it around to funders, to mm-hmm. give people the experience Sherry had earlier this morning where you ride the bike and you take that first pedal and you're like, oh, never mind. I get it. Okay. I'm done. Yeah. I already understand. Because it really is that quick to figure it out. And I started riding it everywhere. So I started going to meetings further and further out. So I routinely will bike up to like the Rookwood area. So Interact for Health, one of our great partners, local health foundation, they're at Rookwood, right there by kind of all those restaurants. I mean, you know, everybody knows where it is. Anyways, but so that's like a, you know, 3-4 mile bike ride from downtown up through Eden Park, which is beautiful. But you can do it in 25 minutes on a red bike.
I'm also going to harken back to an old podcast, which we do sometimes. What episode are we on?
46. Oh, thanks, Phil.
So we're going to go back, and I don't know what episode it is, but you know what we don't like to do at Rookwood? Park. So I feel like if you ever go there again, Jason, you could ride a bike, see?
Well, he has take a the stress.
Curmudgeon moment of going nuts in the Rookwood Exchange parking lot, which... speaking of people who have a lot of stories about that, I'm sure that's true.
Now, is it more expensive to take an e-bike out than it is?
It is not. So everything, you know, all of our various passes are get you access to everything, right? Mm-hmm. Because you need to be able to access whatever bike's there, right? If there's not any bike there, we still want you to be able to access the bike, right? And not feel like, well, I paid more. So what we did do is we kind of moved around our prices a little bit for this launch. And you know, we've been around for 4.5 years now and we hadn't changed our prices at all. So we did some slight increases and we changed up some of our passes. So we now... And we extended the amount of time you can ride on them. So it used to be that most of our passes, you got unlimited 60-minute bike rides, right? So you had to check it in every 60 minutes. And the reason for that is, you know, we can't have people taking the bike up to their office and leaving it all day, or we run out of bikes. So we need some kind of governor to encourage you to put the bike back when you're done using it. But we increased that to 2 hours for everybody. So if you want to ride to Rookwood, half an hour there, go to an hour meeting, ride half an hour back, you now can do that with any of our passes. We also introduced a one-way pass, right? Our single ride pass. So for 20 minutes, for $3, you get a 20-minute bike ride, right? So you can zip around town. And we're hoping that that meets kind of folks where their use case is, right? So we looked at all of our rides and we noticed that we looked at our top 10 most common time of ride, right? So 1 minute, there were this many rides, 5 minutes, there were this many rides, so forth and so on. And what we found was of those top 10, in no particular order, there were 5 ride times that were in the 50s and 5 ride times that were 11, 12, 13, 14, and 15, right? So people were clearly using it two different ways, like Sherry, Courthouse, City Hall, Inquire Building. Mm-hmm. And then other people that were like, this is awesome. I'm going to go for an hour ride because my time ends in an hour, so I have to get it back in the 50-minute range. So that was, we were putting an artificial governor on folks. So we tried to come up with a pass that would like make sense for what people wanted. So we now have a day pass that we extended that ride time to 2 hours per ride, but then we also offer the single ride pass that gives you $3 for every 20 minutes. You know, so it counts up. You can still ride for an hour, but you're gonna pay $9 for it. Mm-hmm. But if you just need to zip over for lunch up to Findlay Market or whatever, that lets you get around for that really easily.
Do you ever anticipate a time where they're not docked at certain places and then we'll like see them like sitting at like in a spot at a corner or like more randomly around?
I don't. And there's two reasons for that. One, specifically, we get all our bikes from B-Cycle. And B-Cycle thus far hasn't shown a lot of interest in dockless bikes of any way. The other thing is, and you know, who's to say how this will work out, but dock, as I said earlier, bike shares are really expensive to operate for the amount of money you get back in order to keep it affordable. Now there are obviously dockless bike companies around the country. And as you can imagine, I've not only read a lot about it, but everybody loves to send me their articles. Scooter this, dockless bikes that, check out these cool bikes. I mean, people just like to send me all that stuff. And obviously I keep my finger on the pulse of that. And so far, it doesn't seem like they've figured out dockless bikes from an economic standpoint, right? And so they might, right? There might be a system out there that makes sense and there might be economies of scale. But I think in a city like Cincinnati, you know, with our size and with our density, nonprofit, docked, community-based bike share is going to be the way to go. That might be different and awesome if it is, right? Yeah. If somebody can figure it out, that's great. But I think once you start to leave the bikes anywhere, there's just all kinds of other stuff that adds to that, right? So now a bike is a much bigger thing than a scooter, right? So scooters are kind of tiny, right? And you can kind of hide them in nooks and crannies. You can kind of still move your way on the sidewalk around them. I still think people obviously need to be good, you know,
scooter citizens
and put the bikes in good spots. But you know, if a scooter gets knocked over, it's less of a problem. You knock a red bike over, you knock any dockless bike over, you've created a real hassle. So I think A, that's something that is challenging. But B, just from a like operation standpoint, you know, if the bikes are everywhere, that really takes away the reliability for the user. And it's nice to walk out and see one and know you can take it, but you have to have a ton of them out there in order for it to be prevalent enough that you're likely to see a bike. You can count on that. And so that's one of the things the scooters have, right? Is folks can walk outside and they can see a scooter and jump on it and go. But what we got is, you know, that here's where the stations are. You're this many blocks away. You know the bikes are going to be there. You can look on the app and know that they're there and can count on that. And just these things are really expensive, you know, as much as 5 times, you know, what scooters are reported to cost. And so it's really hard to get that many out there in the community. But we'll see how it plays out.
Well, what do you think about the scooters, right? Because they got a lot of attention at first, and they're definitely still, like, around on our street corners. Have they changed, anything that you're doing? I mean, it's hard to get a handle on how many people are using them and what's going on with them.
Personally, I think that anything that's going to change the way people get around town and make downtown more vibrant is a good thing. Do I wish everybody chose bicycles because they're just the coolest, most fun thing, as Sherry knows? Obviously. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that, you know, downtowns have limited space. And so the more you can do to get people to not use their cars as much, to get people to move around in different and safe ways, is a positive thing, right? And that was true of the streetcar. That's true of Red Bike. That's true of these e-bikes. It's true of walking, right? Anything that can make all that stuff happen makes downtowns more vibrant, more fun, more active. You know, people love to try to pit Red Bike versus scooters. They're your competition. What are you going to do? How are you going to deal with this? Are those dirty people trying to screw you?
Yeah.
And the reality is that's not true, right? They are a different thing. And some people want to use them, and that's awesome. Some people want to use bikes and have no interest in scooters, and that's awesome. You know, when FC Cincinnati comes to town, the Reds don't get to be like, no fair. We are the baseball team. Stop being mean to us. Come to our event, right?
Yeah.
They've got to be awesome at being the Reds, right? They got to give you a great experience down there. It has to be a family experience. And the Castellinis do an amazing job, right? I go down to the Reds games all the time. Now, that doesn't mean I can't also go to FC Cincinnati games and have a great experience there too, right? That's good for everybody. Is there some tiny, like, are there advertising dollars that go one way or the other? Are there days that people make ticket decisions one way or the other? Maybe. Mm-hmm. But nobody gets to cry like, oh, it's not fair. I deserve something or other. You have to do a good job of being what you are and be valuable to the community, right? And so, you know, that's, you know, and overall, it's just good for everybody.
And you've done that. You've done a tremendous job. Can you give the listeners, maybe who aren't familiar with the history, the little, some perspective on how much you guys have grown in this, what, 5-year period? And then what was this, how did it all get started back in 2014?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Red Bike, bike share in general, like this modern kind of internet-based smart dock bike share, started around 2010 or so in North America in a couple cities. And so around 2013, or 2011, there was a group in Leadership Cincinnati, which is a great local leadership program, often has Inquirer reporters and editorial staff and administrators in it. And they do projects, right? And they kind of research these, and they were researching bike share. This was this new thing in cities, and so they started to look into it. And then these leaders, when they got done with that class, which is a year-long class, they started to continue to look into it, right? And then around 2013, they realized that they'd raised some money, not all the money, but they'd raised some money, and they'd gotten a lot of progress, and they'd done an RFP, and they'd done a feasibility study, and done other stuff. But they were like, all right, we have day jobs. We need somebody that can be the day-to-day, that can go out there and make this happen. And I was super lucky because I wasn't a bicycle person by any means. But I was coming off of working for Mayor Mallory and leaving City Hall. And I had this kind of unique collection of skills. But you know, being a political guy and being a city, working for a politician, it doesn't lead you into like, well, now I will be a politician at a different place, right? And so I was kind of looking for what's next for me. And I got lucky that I knew a lot of people and had kind of an ability to juggle a bunch of stuff. And I got lucky enough to get this gig. And we were off and running. And 10 months later, we launched Red Bike. 30 stations at launch, you know, about 260 bikes. And a year later, we added 17 more stations. And a year after that, we added another 7. And this summer, we added the 100 e-bikes. So now we're up to 500 bikes that we have, about 400 on the streets all the time. We've got 57 stations all throughout, 4 cities, 2 states. We're about to add 9 to 10 more stations, hopefully another 100 e-bikes. And just kind of continue to grow at a kind of sustainable pace. And
I did not know this started at Leadership Cincinnati.
Were you a part of the classes?
No, I was in Leadership Cincinnati like 6 years later. But in 2011, Leadership Cincinnati, and still some of my board members were in that class, and they were researching it, and they were looking into it. And, you know, they looked at a bunch of different models. At one point, it was going to be a bike share station at Fountain Square and a bike share station at Washington Park. And that was going to be it. Cincinnati would have bike share. But obviously, you know, having a lot of stations all over the place allows you to be a real piece of transportation. And so, again, I just can't count myself fortunate enough that I got a chance to do this and that we've been as successful as we've been. It's been a blast.
And one of my favorite things about what you've done, I think every time I see you, I always ask you about this. Are you still riding your bike every day to work? So this was in 2018?
2018, yeah.
You challenged yourself to ride your bike to work from home and back every day during the entire year.
Yeah.
How'd that go?
It definitely wasn't something I set out to do. Rather, it was the second or the third or whatever the Monday was after the holiday. And stubbornly, I was like, even though there was some snow on the ground and it was like, you know, zero or whatever, I was like, I'm going to ride my bike to work, right? And so for whatever reason, when I got off the bike, I thought it was funny to take a photo and be like, you can't ride your bike to work every day of the year if you don't ride your bike to work on the first day of the year, right? Just as kind of a joke, certainly not as a challenge, as much as just like a challenge to the community, right? Like, yeah. And the, you know, for something taking off on Facebook, people really liked that. And so yeah. I did it the next day and then the next day. And then I always credit a buddy from high school's father, like posted, and he's like, this is my favorite thing every day. Don't stop. And I was like, Oh crap, I'm going to have to do this every day. And so I did. I wrote it. It ended up being, I think, like 220 days. Obviously, there were some vacation days and some holidays. But, every work day of the year, I biked.
What was the hardest day? Was it a cold day or a hot day? Or a sick day? Like, what was the hardest?
The hardest day was just when you'd get busy, right? And so there were days where I, like, needed my car because I had to, like, drive somewhere in the morning or drive somewhere at night. And so, you know, to add in kind of like driving, like biking home at lunch to get my car rather than just take my car in. But some of the days that were hardest were honestly the rainy days. Like rainy days were really frustrating, especially when there's something about like a cold rainy day. You like grit your teeth and you're like, people are gonna be so impressed. Like, oh, this is gonna be a good one. This will really inspire some people, right? And then like the days, like probably in April sometime when you've done it a long time, it's kind of gotten monotonous. People are still tuning in. The thing got 30 or 40 likes a day of people just being excited about it. But it definitely got to the point where it's just like, you know, it'd be easier not being wet this morning.
Yeah.
But, you know, the truth is that especially on red bikes, you know, the fenders and the splash guards, you don't really get that wet. So your pants don't end up getting that wet. You know, if you time it right, you know, you can work from home a little bit or whatever. It's just not that bad. And quite frankly, you feel like you can do anything after you've biked to work here in the morning. I mean, you know,
I agree with that.
If you've done spin class in the morning, Sherry, right? Don't you just feel like
everything else is easier,
right? And so it was really fun. People got a big kick out of it. You know, and I still bike to work, you know, most days of the week. Mm-hmm. You know, now that year is over, so I don't have to, I'm not in Facebook purgatory anymore. I don't have to post a picture of myself every day, which was hard. But hopefully it got people thinking about it a little differently. It certainly got me thinking about it a little differently. You know, when you have a challenge like that, it makes you not just be lazy about it and be like, I'm just going to bike or I'm just going to drive. It'll be quicker, which it isn't really, right? By the time you find parking, by the time you kind of get settled down, you know, it's a lot easier to bike in some circumstances.
Are there, I'm just thinking about some folks who maybe just come down for the weekends and hang out in the city or from the suburbs. Where are some places where the stations are that you can, are they around Great American Ballpark, Music Hall? Are they around a lot of these entertainment?
Yeah, I mean, one of the great things about Red Bike is it's basically everywhere where people are, right? Because that's where it makes the most spots. Like one of the first things I learned about trying to figure out where to put these stations was you want to put it at destinations and originations, right? And it's where people start and where people finish. So whether that's a parking lot, people drive down from the suburbs and park in a parking lot, you might want to have a station there because that's you can access the bike right away.
The banks, right?
And so, you know, we really put it in all the spots. You know, we're down at Smale Riverfront Park. We're at the banks. We're by Great American. We have a station around Paul Brown, you know, for the football games of the season. You know, we're up in the middle of town, kind of all the way up Vine Street to some of our most popular stations. We're obviously got stations throughout over the Rhine, including Washington Park, right across from Music Hall, you know, over by the casino, up in the new Pendleton area, not new, but the kind of Pendleton area, which is starting to get rehabbed.
Yep.
We kind of put us in at all of the key spots, right? And so you know, on some levels where people come downtown, you know, we're the spots you want to be at and we'll get you to the spots you need to go. So that's really our goal.
Have you been to like other cities and seen things with their bike share that you're like, I wish we had here?
I mean, not specifically. I certainly learn all the time. And I mean, one of the first things I did when I got the job was I flew to three different cities that had bike share and just said, how'd you do this? Mm-hmm. And just kind of like paid attention to what they're doing. And the bike share world's pretty close knit too. There's a ton of knowledge sharing. There's the North American Bike Share Association, NASBA, which is a, you know, kind of a collection of all the folks that have my job. Cause you know, on some level, you know, there's only 5 or 10 people in this city that think about bike share every day, right? Mm-hmm. My staff, my board members. And then there's lots of folks like you guys that use it and enjoy it, but you don't have to like think about the nuts and bolts. So it's really great to kind of get that knowledge base together in all these different cities and share ideas of what works, what doesn't work, and really kind of learn from what other people are doing. And then think about those ideas, make them kind of uniquely our own and mm-hmm. make them uniquely fit the dynamics of Cincinnati and then roll them out and see how they do.
So I feel like bike share is so Cincinnati.
It's so Cincinnati, and it's here to stay, and it's growing.
But I don't feel like, so we didn't actually say what your job was. You were chief of staff to former Mayor Mark Mallory.
Yep.
But I don't feel like we should, like, that's so Cincinnati. So I feel like we can't let you go without you saying, like, what is your most Cincinnati day ever when you worked in the mayor's office?
You were with Mayor Mallory for both of his terms, right?
Correct, yeah. I worked for him originally. I was hired when he was in the state Senate, and so I worked. Okay. I worked in the state legislature for a couple of years and then commuted back and forth during the campaign, which was obviously really exciting. Mm-hmm. And then, 8 years in the mayor's office, which was just an absolute blast. And I had a ton of highs and lows, right? And it's hard to pick out kind of one day that is the most special. But there were lots of really rewarding ones. That whether it was getting a budget deal done or avoiding layoffs. I remember there was one day where all the unions, we had a really tough, but I mean, in the recession, the budgets were just so tough. And we had to fill like a $50 or $60 million hole in the budget because tax revenue was just down. And I remember it was really tough negotiations with the unions. And I remember there was like a moment when we heard the unions had voted in favor of kind of the deal, right? And that was just so amazing because all these people got to keep their jobs and like, it like worked out and nobody mm-hmm. lost their jobs through that. And, those are the kind of amazing moments,
Back in those days, the budget was like a calendar year. So it was like, they were like Christmas budgets.
Yeah.
And so they would always like kind of go up to the wire of like, Christmas Eve.
We definitely did negotiations on Christmas Eve. We'd get off, we'd head home. You'd have a day and a half with your family and then negotiations will begin again on the 26th.
You still keep in touch with Mayor Mallory?
Oh yeah. We're gonna be friends for life.
Yeah,
he's my guy.
Yeah, he always will. No, you guys were his right hand person for a long time. I know people always ask this around the political world. Any sense that he's gonna run for anything again?
I guess we'll have to see what happens in the future. Yeah. I'm really proud of the 8 years that he had. Mm-hmm. I was proud to do what we did. I think that. We kept our eye on making the city a better place. And I think that, for me, not only is my friend, but he's somebody that I'm just really inspired by and somebody that I think is just a really great leader. And so I think that hopefully our 8 years will be remembered fondly and people will like the kind of leadership that he provided. I certainly have learned so much from him that I apply daily in my job about how to deal with employees and how to deal with others and how to deal with situations and arguments among people. I mean, he was just so calm and level-headed and just really had a way with people to bring people together and to say, look, I'm not going to get involved in this back and forth fight. We got to figure this out and make this work. I was joking with Sherry. I recently got on the board of my HOA and it's definitely the dumbest thing that I've ever agreed to do voluntarily. But there's just things like that where you just think about the world in a different way with some of the lessons he taught me and just so.
I'm glad you said that about Mayor Mallory. I didn't even think about asking this going in. We just sort of went there, and I'm glad you brought that up about him. That he was. I think a lot of times he gets kind of lost in the streetcar. But when it came to being able to manage people and relate to people, and the way he handled meetings was. It was an incredible skill in the way he does that. So, Sherry, do you have another question?
Well, I think we have to ask. We're just going to tie it all together in a nice big red bow. Have you gotten Mayor Mallory on a bike? he's a dress-up kind of guy, so I appreciate that about him. Like, not heels like me, but he does get dressed up.
So, we have not ridden bikes together. I'm sure that I don't know if he's ridden bikes or not. But I'm focused on, getting everybody I can get on the bikes. Like, I got to say, John Cranley, also huge proponent of Red Bike, does ride bikes all the time. He's been a big supporter of Red Bike from the beginning, rides bikes all the time downtown. We always joke so you can see on the back end, we see the trips, right? The trips pop up as people check the bikes out. And every once in a while, you'll see the one pop out for Mayor Cranley as he's heading off to a meeting or whatever. And my staff always jokes that Red Bike 1 is out, right? Because on Air Force 1, as while there is a plane, Air Force One, it's actually whatever plane the president is on, it becomes Air Force One instantly. So if the president, for whatever reason, were to get on a Delta flight, it would be Air Force One, right? And there'd be the whole military and the whole thing. And so we always joke that whenever he's on a bike, we're on Red Bike One, because he's the leader of the city and he's jetting around to a...
Then you like send special security and you have one of the trucks behind him in case it breaks down.
I think he can take care of himself.
Okay.
But we take good care of the City Hall station because without council and the mayor, where would we be, right? They got us off the ground in the beginning and they continue to support us. So
before we let you off the hot seat, for folks who maybe aren't familiar about Red Bike or want to learn more about it, where can they find out more?
Two great spots. So we have a website, Cincy with a Y, redbike.org. It's got all the details there. But one of the best ways is just download the app, which is B-Cycle. That's bicycle without the I. Download it at Google Play or Apple Store or whatever your spots are. Get on your phone. You can check out a pass really easily, whether you want to get an annual pass and ride as much as you want for a whole year, unlimited two-hour rides, or whether you just want that $3 for 20-minute single ride pass. You can download the app, be riding a bike within minutes.
To CincyBike.org on the
redbike.org.
Redbike.org website, B-Cycle mobile app, download it.
And you'll be off and riding quickly.
And we are going to post a video. Phil, producer with the mostest, he came along for our little e-bike lesson today, and we're going to post a video, and Jason does kind of show me the ropes of it, because I was nervous. You'll see.
Awesome.
I'm
looking forward to seeing
it. She loved it.
Be on Cincinnati.com, so we'll look forward to seeing
you. You're next, Jason. Whether video or not, we got to get you out riding bikes sometime soon.
I was just at Hilton Head. I was riding my bike all over the place, but I like trails. I don't like riding on the roads and streets very much, but I do need to ride red bike. It's time. All right, let's get out of this. Thanks, Jason, again.
It's been a blast. Thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
Okay, thanks to Jason for coming in. Jason Barron, great insight. Red Bike is awesome. Sherry, I know you guys had fun. You took a ride with Jason, and you're a big Red Bike fan, getting around downtown to City Hall and the courthouse and everywhere around town. And you really adopted that from the get-go.
Honestly, I have to say, I do have a new goal now, which is since the mayor's bike is was a Red Bike One. I feel like when they see me, check one out, it's going to have a name now. So that's my new goal, but it has to be organic. We can't name it ourselves, I don't think.
maybe we could get Jason to order a Lilly Pulitzer, design bike.
Maybe put like a Lilly Pulitzer. My birthday's in November, so. there you go.
Again, thanks to Jason. It's good to sort of in what's been really a crazy news period here. Sometimes, July and August are a little bit of a downtime, but it's been crazy lately. And obviously we have Trump coming in the rally tomorrow at U.S. Bank Arena. So the news, the political and government news continues. And so it's fun to bring Jason in and just have him talk about some fun things going on around downtown.
Harks back to our Graders episode where we learned a lot about, the history of, the best ice cream there is, even though I'm like sitting right next to a Kilwins. When you're on vacation and you can eat Kilwins, it's fine and it's very good, but nothing is Graders.
I love all of our guests.
Also, that's so Cincinnati of me, sorry.
So Cincinnati. I will say this, folks. I know we gained a lot of new listeners last week with the Joe Dieters episode. I love all of our guests. I'm appreciative so much of all of our guests, Alex Triantafilou and Gwen McFarlane and Joe Dieters and Alicia Reese. And we got some more big folks lined up coming down the line. But this is nothing against anyone, any of our other guests, but my absolute favorite guest so far has been Grader CEO Rich Grader. That was such a fun interview. So I'll go back and check that out. I believe that was four or five episodes ago. So, one thing that, really struck, us this week, Sherry, or in the past week is, the Neil Armstrong, story about the settlement that his family reached with,
the wrongful death.
The wrongful death.
Lawsuit.
And how that came about to be a story was,
the documents came to us in the mail. Specifically, they came to Ann Saker.
To our health reporter.
You know, somebody, we don't know who sent them, but somebody understood that she, that the Inquirer has a person dedicated to covering our medical community, knew who she was, and put some stuff in the mail in a big manila envelope and sent it along.
And it... I am terrible at checking my snail mail, and our news director, Michael Perry, went and looked at all of our mailboxes and saw that I'm terrible at it and pulled out a bunch of my mail. These are very open, by the way. Nobody's sneaking around or anything. And he says, man, make sure you check your mail because you never know what's in there. And he mentioned the Neil Armstrong thing. And so I got all my mail, and it's this huge stack, which is thicker than a super big boy or a Big Mac. I kind of looked at it, and I bet there's probably 50 handwritten letters I've received from readers over the last several months, and I'm overwhelmed by it, and I'm flattered by it, and some of them, I haven't gotten through all of them yet. I've only actually gotten through a few of them. A lot of praise, a lot of criticism, but I love it all. I'm glad
people are willing to take the time and listen to an episode. That was kind of with the numbers that, you know, Joe Dieters drew. He did make news, and as we all know at this point.
Yeah.
But to that translate to hours to us, and that's like, it's such a time commitment, and I'm so appreciative of that. But that's the same thing with the idea that people take time to sit down and write letters.
And I tell people this, and I get so many emails from readers, and again, same thing. And I tell people, the people who email me compliments or criticisms, I tell them, I say thank you for caring enough to take the time to email me. And I even feel extra that way for people who have taken the time to write a handwritten letter, buy a thing, a stamp and an envelope, and, you know, drop it in their mailbox or go down to the post office and drop it in. Wow. It's cool to get these, and it's people still send handwritten letters. And I'm really excited to, it's like a treasure trove. I'm really excited to go through and see what people have said, and work on getting back with people. And so what's the moral of our story, Sherry? Handwritten letters are awesome.
That's the moral right there. But honestly, thank you. Right.
That's the moral of the story
is just thank you. It's a reminder to us that people are listening and we do care about them. And I do all of this actually for readers. And that's when I'm writing stories or doing something like this, I'm thinking about what people need to know. And that's kind of the goal. It's nice to have that.
Yeah, it is. And let me say, the handful I've gotten through so far are people who read us in print on our digital platforms and who listen to our podcast. And one of the letters I have opened so far was a letter from Nick LaRosa with LaRosa's Pizza, and said he had heard us talking about LaRosa's, and I think it was when I had criticized LaRosa's sweet sauce, and he wrote me this really, but I said my kids and my wife love it, and they're from Cincinnati, and wrote me this super nice letter, and actually laid out in there like some of the things that I could buy that didn't involve getting their sauce. And so what I did last night was I went home, and my wife was out with one of her friends, and I was with the kids, and I went home and I ordered LaRosa's, and one of the things he recommended was a LaRosa's calzone, which I've had before and I love, but it prompted me to like go and I ordered it online, and they delivered to my house, and it was awesome.
So I'll tell you what, for LaRosa's last week, you know what I remembered about LaRosa's? So it was a very busy news week, and when that happens, right, they order in food for us, and we did get LaRosa's, and they thoughtfully got a salad, and I had one of their salads, and it was so fresh and delicious. Yep. And I was thankful that we had a salad and I didn't have to just eat bad the entire week, which does tend to happen in big news stories. It's like, you're not bringing food with you, and it's like just whatever's laying around you eat. And so I have to say their salads are very good. It was a reminder. I was sitting at my desk writing, eating one of their salads.
Phil, you know what La Rosa's is, right?
So Cincinnati.
Phil Didion, our executive producer on the ones and twos, he's the man. We appreciate everything. He's the guy that makes this whole thing go. And so again,
he's been so nice that he's the one who's like, well, you guys don't actually have to be in the podcast booth. Not that I don't love being in there with you, and we have to have the fan because sometimes it gets so hot. But
I know, it's this little tiny closet.
It's possible to call in.
But thanks to Nick LaRosa for the really kind letter and for listening. And that was super. Nick, thanks so much for that. And if we welcome your feedback, everyone, email us. Email me jwilliams@inquirer.com or Sherry or both of us, scoolidge@inquirer.com. Follow Sherry on Twitter @SharonCoolidge @JWilliamsCincy.
It's Wednesday morning, and it's Wednesday morning, and our vacation is coming to an end tomorrow. So I'm going to be back in time for the Trump rally. So that's Twitterpalooza.
We'll both be at the Trump rally covering it, tweeting like crazy. Writing stuff, and so be sure to check Cincinnati.com. That segues me right in. I just checked our subscription page, 99-cent summer deal going on right now for an all-access digital subscription. Folks, let me tell you, we've changed our subscription digital subscription thing right now. You may have noticed where a lot of our content or some of our exclusive content is now for subscribers only. And the response that we've received to that of new subscriptions has been so awesome and so much like the handwritten letters. Thank you so much. And so there's always a great deal going on our digital subscriptions. Support local journalism. Nobody's doing what we're doing to cover this region and city that you love so much. So please consider that. Be sure next week is a big week. We got a big guest. You're going to love it. Be sure to come back next week, and we'll look forward to it. Thank you so much.
I'm going back to the beach.
Thanks.